Hey, this is Leo for actualized.org. And in this episode, I'm going to be talking about the paradox of self-trust. How do you develop trust in yourself in this work while at the same time questioning many of the limiting aspects of yourself and your worldview? There's a very interesting paradox at the heart of personal development, which is that on the one hand, all personal development advice tells you to question yourself, question the things you believe, and to really deeply doubt very fundamental aspects of your being. And then on the other hand, all personal development advice tells you to trust yourself completely. So what should you do? Should you doubt yourself or should you trust yourself? How do we reconcile this? This is very difficult. It's a very challenging sort of Gordian knot for the newbie of personal development to unravel. And even when you're getting into the intermediate phases of personal development, it's still very tricky to grapple with this. Because really what you're doing with all personal development work is you're trying to understand, okay, what aspects of myself should I trust? And what aspects of myself are deceptive and misleading and sort of counterintuitively leading me down the wrong paths in life? And finding that middle ground, being able to discern between the two, is what the bulk of the work is for. That's why you're doing the work, you see. I want to help you to sort out some of the good from the bad here. So one problem is that you're not doubting deeply enough. You're not nearly doubting deeply enough some of the things you need to be doubting. And then on the other hand, the problem is that you don't have faith in the things you should have faith in. Those quote unquote right parts of you. What I want to talk about is I want to give you some lists and some guidelines for how to understand the things that you should be doubting and the things you should be having faith in. Because what's very interesting is that what I see in newbies, and I experienced this myself, passing through the newbie stages of personal development, is that the newbie falls into two extremes here. One problem for the newbie is that he trusts very blindly and gullibly his own mind, basically. He doesn't recognize the self-deceptive characteristics of the mind. So the newbie tends to trust his beliefs. His beliefs about people, about the world, about himself. These beliefs could be very limiting, or they could even be empowering beliefs, but nevertheless, he really trusts them. He buys into them, hook, line, and sinker. And that creates a lot of problems for him down the road, because every belief ends up being limiting, even the positive ones. So there's that aspect. We're going to talk a lot more about that. That's a whole can of worms. He also trusts his fears a lot. He trusts his emotions. The various emotional triggers and buttons that he has, he trusts those when really he shouldn't be. And of course, he trusts his ego way too much, way too much. So this misplaced trust leads the newbie completely astray in life. And then on the other hand, he doesn't trust enough. This is the other extreme for the newbie, is that he doesn't trust enough his intuition and what I'm going to call his higher self. But see, what is the right intuition? What is the proper higher self? These labels like ego or intuition or higher self, they're very abstract labels. So it's not really helpful for me to tell you these things just like this, because in your mind, it doesn't really resolve anything because you need like the fine-grained distinctions and details so that your mind can actually sort out what can be trusted and what can't be trusted. In a sense, this is sort of the same problem that computer software runs into. Like, for example, operating systems, right? They have to distinguish between what is a computer virus and what is legitimate, useful software that you're installing on the machine. And sometimes you have false positives. Like if you install an antivirus kind of checker program, right? Like Norton Security or something like that, then one thing that will annoy you about that kind of software is that it hits you with false positives. That means that it thinks, oh, this thing is bad. It's a virus. And actually, you know that, no, this is not a virus. This is a good program that I want to install on my computer. And then, of course, it also has the opposite problem, is that it doesn't detect the viruses, because if you got a new sneaky virus, it comes into your machine and your security software is not up to date yet. It doesn't catch that virus and the virus gets you. Well, the same thing has sort of happened in your mind. And this is tricky because the devil is in details. The same sort of problem is faced by your biological immune system, right? It has to distinguish between what are the good substances for your body to accept, and then what are the bad foreign agents that it should reject. And sometimes the body gets it wrong. In fact, there's a whole slew of diseases called autoimmune diseases, where what happens is that your immune system attacks itself. It attacks various organs in the body because it now, for some reason, believes that these organs in your body, even though they're your own, it somehow believes, it's deluded itself into thinking that, oh, these are actually bad foreign agents, I need to kill them. And it actually sends out, like, certain cells that go out and try to kill these parts of your body, which of course leads to some disastrous results. And likewise, your immune system can go wrong the other way, in the other extreme, and it can let all sorts of foreign agents come into your body that will kill you because it doesn't defend you properly against the foreign agents, right? So it's very important for these systems, very complex systems, they have to very carefully distinguish, and the devil is in the details. So for the newbie, you know, this creates neurosis. Because look at this. For the newbie, on the one hand, he's trusting all these false beliefs and fears and his ego and his mind a lot. So that creates a lot of neurosis. But also, he doesn't trust the higher self in him and the intuition, his own innate creative capacities. He doesn't really trust in those. And then so, of course, yeah, he becomes neurotic. He becomes fearful in places in life where he shouldn't be fearful. He becomes dysfunctional in those places where he should be functional, right? This is what neurosis is. Neurosis fundamentally is an inability to trust in yourself. It's to always be kind of fighting with yourself, grappling with yourself. Do you face that problem as a student of personal development? Is that like you're fighting yourself to be disciplined? You're fighting yourself to get motivated. You're fighting yourself to resist certain foods or certain temptations. Or you're telling yourself, no, I got to do this because this is what I've been told, or this is what's right. This is what should happen because you have these rules, right? That's classic neurosis. So personal development work is supposed to help you to unwire that neurosis because, hey, you know, living a neurotic life is not very pretty. It's stressful. It's dramatic. It's just like needless drama in your life. Why do you want that? You don't. You want to get rid of it. But how do you get rid of it is the real trick. So you got to find out and you got to know what you should be doubting within your system of beliefs and self and what you should be trusting. And in a nutshell, what you're doing with all personal development work is that you're discovering self-deceptions, many, many, many very sneaky and very subtle self-deceptions that have been part of this system that we call you, the mind and the body, for years and decades. And it's very hard to go in there and to isolate and to pinpoint what these viruses that are infecting your mind actually are. But let me help you here. So let me first give you a list of things that you should start to doubt about yourself. And when I mean doubt, I'm not talking about doubting other people or what other people say. Everything I'm talking about in this episode is all you, right? We're talking about self-trust and self-doubt, not other trust and other doubt. If you have problems with trusting other people, or if you are like a constant skeptic and skeptical of everything people tell you, including what I tell you, that's another matter. Another matter. And actually, what you'll discover if you pay close attention to what I'm telling you here in this episode is that your trust issues with other people and with other ideas and belief systems and so forth, your skepticism, that actually it's rooted in a deep distrust of yourself. It's because you can't trust yourself that you have problems trusting others. And it's because you doubt yourself that you doubt everything else in the external world. So let's focus on you. You as a self, as an ego. That's the first thing you should start to doubt, is the ego. And what the ego is basically the entire structure of mind that you have. This notion that you are an individual, separate from life somehow, separate from other people, separate from the world, separate from nature, separate from the environment, that you are there and I am here, and that you need to defend yourself. This whole defense mechanism structure needs to start to be doubted. The newbie never really doubts this very seriously. The newbie doesn't look at his own self-biases. Have you noticed that everything you believe and almost every idea you hold is biased towards yourself in an untruthful sort of way? Have you noticed this? So, for example, if you're driving on the road and someone cuts you off, you get pissed off at the person who cut you off. You might say, well, that makes sense. He cut me off. Of course I'm going to get pissed off. Okay. But what's interesting is that if you cut somebody off, you will not hold yourself to that same standard, will you? You will come up with a rationalization which will say something, oh, yeah, but, you know, Leo, I was in a hurry. You know, I was in a hurry. My child was sick. So I am justified in cutting this person off. That's a very innocent example. Hopefully, if you're a student of personal development, you've been noticing these sorts of self-biases. And when I tell you the word self-bias, immediately in your mind, 1,000 examples should pop up of the ways in which you are untruthfully self-biased. It means you give yourself, your ego, preferential treatment. For example, a lot of guys do this in relationships. They'll say, you know what? I love open relationships. I like seeing lots of girls. Okay, so you like seeing lots of girls. That's fine. But then what happens when your girl, one of the girls you're seeing, says, hey, you know what? I want to see other guys too. I like seeing lots of guys. Are you going to be cool with that? And now, see, the mind likes to play a lot of very sneaky games here. So what the mind could say is like, oh, yeah, Leo, sure, sure. Yeah, I'll let her go see other guys. I don't care because you know what? I got other girls. I'll just replace her with another girl. But see, that doesn't really address the issue, does it? What if all of your girls wanted to see other guys? How would you feel then? And what if you couldn't replace them? How would you feel then? Would you still be cool with it? And here you have to be very, very honest, because your mind gets very, very sneaky, right? Comes up with a lot of rationalizations. So this is just a couple of examples of what I mean by looking at your self-biases, right? And then kind of holding yourself accountable for them and saying, wait a minute, why is there this double standard? Why do I have all these double standards? Why is my outrage that I feel towards other people filled with so many double standards? And then when you start to notice that, you start to see, oh, yeah, it's all about me. The whole game that I'm playing here with my ego is I'm trying to get more for me. So, of course, all these double standards are here because it's just me. It's all for me. And then, you know, if the ego is really bad, if the ego is totally out of control, the ego will say, well, Leo, so what? So what? What's wrong with an ego? What's wrong with ego? What's wrong with it being all about me? What's wrong with that? It would take me hours to explain all the things wrong with that. This is where you need to start to trust a little bit of your intuition to start to see what's wrong with that. But let's move on, because there's a lot of other points I want to talk about. So there's this also, you have to start to doubt your self-defense mechanisms. So all these, I've already started to go into the self-defense mechanisms that people have against their double standards. So you have to start to question your self-defense mechanisms. All the excuses you make for why you're special, why you should be treated differently. Also, you have to start to doubt all of your beliefs and ideologies. So anything you believe and you hold is like, okay, this is it. This is the most certain thing that I know. This cannot possibly be false. That thing right there, you need to doubt that. I'll tell you that flat out. Doubt the shit out of it. Throw it away. That most cherished belief you have, whatever it is, God, science, atheism, you know, your beliefs about men and women, about sexuality, about business, about money, about life, about death, whatever. That's the thing you got to question, and question it so deeply that you stop believing in it. But of course, what ego really wants to do that? Not very many. That's the problem, right? Because your immune system has actually now been corrupted by these beliefs. And now, because your immune system actually is composed of these beliefs, it doesn't want to question some of the most deepest beliefs you hold, because it's threatening to the whole structure of the ego, right? But this is a problem for you, because your immune system, once it's filled with these strong beliefs, then it will use those to attack any possibility for growth and consciousness that you run across in your future. Because growth and consciousness is anti all beliefs. It's anti-ideological, you see. That's why every belief gets in the way. Now, some beliefs are much worse than others, but don't let your mind trick you into thinking like, oh, well, yeah, some beliefs are bad, but some beliefs are good. No. It's not about good and bad. It's really about whether you're a slave to your beliefs or you're actually free of your beliefs. That's the issue. The issue is not about true and false beliefs. All beliefs are false. I'll tell you that right now. So that's not the issue. The issue is, are you actually practically free of your beliefs and ideologies? Do you actually hold them lightly? Or do you hold them tightly, like a baby blanket that you need to protect yourself with? That's the issue. So start to doubt every single one of your beliefs. Also, start to doubt your mind and all your thoughts, your entire structure of the rational mind, everything that is quote-unquote rational and logical. Start to doubt all of that, all of it. Start to question rationality itself. Start to question logic itself. Start to question all your reasons for your beliefs. So every belief you hold has a justification behind it. It's like, well, I believe the earth is round because XYZ. That's how it works, right? Those XYZ are the justifications, and those are the things you need to start to doubt. Why do you believe XYZ? Well, because of ABC. And why do you believe ABC? Well, because of DFG. And why do you believe those? Well, because of LMNOP or whatever, you know, right? You have like a nested kind of hierarchy of justifications, and you need to trace all those down to the very bottom to see where they terminate. Doubt rationality itself, doubt logic itself, doubt science. These are things that in general people do not doubt enough. They are taken on faith. And that turns out to be a very damaging thing. Because once you take all these things on faith, your mind becomes closed to experiencing the deeper states of consciousness and awareness that are possible. And you're basically locked in to your present, normal, mundane, everyday state of consciousness, which is a very, very limited state. You can't do very much in that state. You need to get to higher states. And you can't get there through logic and rationality and through science. At least not as they're typically conceived. So you have to start to question all those. Now, I'm not saying you have to abandon that and become some kind of stupid moron fool who does completely irrational things. I'm just saying start to question, start to doubt. Apply the skepticism in the right places. Internally, not externally. So the biggest problem that self-ordained skeptics commit is that they're skeptical of everything, but focused outward. Their skepticism isn't focused inward enough on themselves. If you want to be a skeptic, that's great. I love skepticism. But the most skeptical thing you should be skeptical about is skepticism itself, right? Your skepticism has to go so deep that even you start to doubt your own skepticism. That's when you're being a proper skeptic. Otherwise, what it is just a tool for the ego to reject new ideas and new avenues for growth. Also, don't think that I've left religion untouched here. So while you're doubting science and logic and rationality, at the same time, doubt the shit out of religion. Every religious belief you have about God and what's right and what's good and what's evil and about the Bible and whatever, you know, if you grew up a Hindu or a Jew or a Christian or a Buddhist, it doesn't matter. Question all that, because all that is holding you back from actually growing and discovering the higher states of consciousness that actually your religion is talking about. Also, start to doubt your emotions. So when you feel angry, when you feel jealous, when you feel defensive, when you feel hurt, when you feel fearful, when you feel like you need to protect yourself, when you feel judgmental, when you feel violent and angry, when you feel self-righteous, all these sorts of emotions, question all those emotions. Ask yourself, what is this emotion? Is it actually true? Could it be a tool of the ego that is being used here to play games, to manipulate myself and to manipulate others? Could that really be what's going on with these emotions? The newbie doesn't really question these emotions. He's actually just reacting to these emotions. He's a slave to these emotions. Also, question your quote-unquote good emotions. Not just the bad emotions, but also the good ones. Because actually, this distinction between good emotions, bad emotions, you've made the wrong distinction there. You don't really know what the good emotions are and what the bad emotions are. Really, the bad emotion is any emotion that you are a slave to and that you're unconscious to. So this could include emotions like happiness and excitement and love. These can be very damaging emotions. Because it's very easy to use love to actually hurt people. It's very easy to use love to manipulate people, to delude yourself about what you're doing with this person in a relationship, why you're with them. Very easy to delude yourself with love. Excitement can also be very deluding as an emotion. You can't just blindly follow excitement wherever it leads you, because it could lead you down some very terrible paths in life. So you have to question your excitement too. These things that you take for granted, it's like, oh, I'm excited by this thing. Well, yeah, sure, you might be excited by having sex with lots of people. That might be very exciting to you. But is that really growing you? Or you might be excited about earning lots of money in business. And sure, that's exciting. But the question is that really what you should be doing with your life? Or you might be excited to get into a relationship and get married, settle down, have a bunch of kids. And the question is that really the choice that's going to grow you the most? Or is that actually an escape? So you have to question all those. Yeah, emotions can be very self-deceptive. Also, you have to question and doubt your criticism of other people, also known as projection. Have you noticed yet that almost every single criticism you make of other people, whether it's teachers, friends, family, coworkers, bosses, celebrities, business people that you read about in the Wall Street Journal, you know, your enemies, if you have any enemies, if you judge me, if you judge a book that you're reading, if you judge a video that you're watching, have you noticed that all this stuff is just a projection of your own ego? It has nothing to do with me. It has nothing to do with the person. It has nothing to do with the celebrity or what kind of dickish thing you think your boss did to you or whatever. It has nothing to do with that. It's really all about you. It's about your own insecurities and your own projections onto other people. So you have to really start to question every single criticism that you have, to the point where you question your own criticism so much that you can't even make a critical move anymore. It's like, I want to criticize that guy, but I'm too aware. I can see that my criticism of him is actually a denial of something that I'm doing. It's actually a projection. Oh, I can't criticize him anymore. Right? You want to get to that point. Also, you want to doubt all your cultural preferences. Cultural indoctrination is huge in every single culture. I don't care if you're a Hindu, or if you're Asian, or if you're Japanese, or if you're Middle Eastern, or if you're European, or if you're American. It doesn't matter. You have thousands of cultural preferences and norms and beliefs that you have just kind of soaked up like a sponge from your culture. And you've never doubted them. You've never really questioned them. And it's especially dangerous for people in Western culture, because as a Western culture, part of Western culture is sort of this kind of like individualistic, anti-cultural norm, which says like, oh yeah, I'm kind of a typical American, so, you know, I don't really buy into culture all that much. But then, you know, Americans are, instead of having the traditional cultures of like Eastern countries, they have a culture of consumerism, like the popular culture, the music culture, the video game culture, the drug culture, the college culture, the pickup culture, the whatever culture. So if you consider yourself acultural, if you could consider yourself kind of like a modern American or Western-minded type of person, doesn't matter where you live, you still have these very powerful cultural influences in you, which are shaping the things that you're pursuing in life, what you're doing, what you're desiring, what you're avoiding in life. Whether it's money, sex, marriage, family, all this kind of stuff. Largely, you don't even know what your authentic desires are in life because the cultural influences are so strong and yet also so subtle and so taken for granted by you that they're never questioned. Yeah? It's like you've been infected by the cultural virus. And now that virus is running you. And that's all stuff you got to question. Question very, very deeply. Also, you should question, while you're at it, any moralizations or shoulds that you have. I have entire episodes about this, where I talk about the should statements and how you moralize to yourself and to other people. But basically, all those statements you have, such as like, I should be fit, and I should be rich, and I shouldn't be sick, and my kids should be good at school, and my wife should be pretty, and this should be this way, and that should be that way, and my husband should be loyal to me, and all these shoulds that you have, they all need to be questioned because they're holding you back. You have should statements because fundamentally you're not making conscious choices in your life. So you're dictating yourself with these rules, but these rules are very limiting. They're not robust enough. They don't have enough requisite variety to navigate life successfully because we live in a very complex and nuanced world these days. Also, you should question and doubt your motivations, which are based on obligation or duty. Where are you motivated in life and you feel like, well, I have to do this because there's a sense of responsibility and duty, whether it's coming from my culture or from my family, or from the fact that I'm a husband, or that I'm a wife, or that I'm a father, or that I'm a mother, or that I'm a brother, or that I'm a sister, or that I'm a student, or that I'm a professor, or that I'm a boss, or that I'm an employee, or whatever. Question all that. Most of those are not authentic to you, and they are creating neurotic forms of motivation in your life. This is why so many people have motivation problems in life. Also, you should deeply question when you beat yourself up. A lot of people like to beat themselves up and be harsh with themselves, talk harshly to themselves, kind of discipline harshly to themselves, because they think that that's the proper way to motivate yourself, and that that will actually lead to improvements and growth. It won't. That leads to neurosis. Leads to unconsciousness, leads to very screwed up behavioral patterns in your life, leads to lack of groundedness and consistency in your action taking. also doesn't make you feel very good when you beat yourself up. It ruins your self-esteem, erodes your confidence, and so forth. So you got to start to question why you do that and why you feel like beating yourself up is preferable to actually accepting and loving yourself. Who'd have thunk that that would be a better option? Also, you have to start to question your web of beliefs, what I call the web of beliefs, or your entire model of reality. So the things you think about reality, which seem very certain, like time, space, the universe, the Big Bang Theory, and all this kind of stuff, you know, whatever your models of reality are, whether you think God created reality, or do you think reality came out of, you know, nothing, or whatever you think, all this is nonsense. Because it's not based on any direct experience you have. It's just ideas you have. Likewise, your ideas about men and women, your ideas about business, your ideas about what's right and wrong in the world, your ideas about terrorists, your ideas about the government, your ideas about politics, all this kind of stuff, your entire web of beliefs, your entire model of reality is largely fictional. And you have to go in there and challenge and question every single one of them to see, wait a minute, is this belief I have, is it grounded in actual direct experience, or is it just something I heard from somewhere and that I like, I happen to like it, so I just added it to my web of beliefs? You have to do that. That's a lot of work because you got a lot of unquestioned beliefs in your model of reality. And lastly, the thing you got to really question is your identity. Your very existential nature, who you think you are. What are you as the most like metaphysical of questions? What are you? Are you a human being sitting there listening to me? Is that what you are? Were you actually born? Are you a kid who grew up and then went through adolescence and then became an adult? Is that what you actually are? Your identification with your body and your mind, is that actually what you are? Are you your models of reality? Are you the things you believe? Are you what your face looks like? Are you what your body can do? Are you the athlete? Are you the guy who can go to the gym and bench press 300 pounds? Is that actually what you are? Or is that an identity that you've constructed? And if it is just an identity that you've constructed, then what are you underneath the construction? If you deconstruct the entire identity, what are you left with? What is that? You have to deeply, deeply, deeply question all those things. So this is a list of the things that you should be doubting that most newbies take totally for granted. And it takes so much open-mindedness just to even understand my instructions to you here. Because even though I told you all these things, now you have to go spend years, maybe decades, questioning everything I told you by yourself. You can't read it in a book. I'm not telling you to go read the answers in a book because that won't happen. It's not going to work. You have to actually sit down and dig in to yourself. I can't tell you the answers. It's not about having answers. It's about exploring these in a skeptical manner, without an agenda, not trying to prove or to disprove anything, but just trying to look at what the facts are of the situation. Where did all these beliefs come from? Where did your cultural notions and preferences come from? Are they authentically yours? Or have they just kind of snuck their way into your life? Now let me tell you some things that you should trust. You should trust more your intuition and what I'm going to call your higher self. Your higher self is the thing that we can contrast with the ego. The ego is worried about kind of defending itself, acquiring more for itself, aggrandizing itself, making it feel itself feel secure, special, and protected. The higher self is more about just being in the present moment, being open, being spontaneous, being kind of playful and free. The way that you were as a child, that kind of pure, innocent source of, sense of self. So you should obviously trust that more. And that can be difficult for some people to even recognize in themselves anymore. Because after 20, 30 years of life, you've been so bombarded with traumatic events and people screwing you over and various belief systems and indoctrination in your school and your college, from your professors, from your religious leaders, from your politicians, from your family, from everybody, from the books you've been reading, from the TV shows you've been watching, by popular culture, you've been bombarded by all this. So that now it's like, my original self. What is my original self? I don't even know. But also it's possible to kind of just, you know, move all that stuff apart, move it all away, and just kind of get a little sneak peek, maybe a little crack opens up through the facade, through the web of beliefs. And then you can kind of look down deep through in there, and then you can see, oh, that's what, yeah, I have a memory of what it was like to be my original self. That thing you can trust. In fact, that thing right there might be the roadmap for you for how to get out of this mess that you're in now, today, as an adult. So look at your child self. As your child self, try to remember, what are the things that moved you? What are the things that inspired you? How did you behave? How did you hold your body? How did you speak? How did you sit? How did you smile? How did you relate to other people? Now, you got to be careful here, because some kids, they have dysfunctional childhoods right off the bat. So maybe you were one of those unfortunate kids who was like beaten or molested, or even something a lot less sinister than that. Maybe just some kids laughed at you at first grade. You know, when you went to first grade, some kids laughed at you. And because of that, right off the bat, when you were 7 years old, already you couldn't properly relate to boys and girls at school because you were afraid of them laughing at you. So, you know, there will be aspects of your original self that I think you can find, even if you've been victimized and traumatized as a kid. But for some people, it'll be a lot harder than for others, right? And you got to be careful. This is where the, you know, careful distinguishing has to happen. When you trust parts of yourself, it's very dangerous, because everything on this list of things that I'm telling you that you can trust, also notice that it's very easy for the ego to use that as an escape, kind of like a back door. So the ego will say like, oh yeah, when I was a kid, you know, I was shy as a kid. I remember being shy in first grade. Because I was shy in first grade, that means that's my original self. Leo told me that's my original self. So that means I'm just like a shy, introverted child, and I'm that way as an adult, and that's how I'll be forever. No, that's not what Leo is telling you. Not at all. So you got to be very, very careful here. With everything that I'm telling you that you should trust, you have to also be a little bit skeptical about it and be like, is my ego just using that as a backdoor to actually get in there and manipulate its way into my psyche? See? You should also trust the drive for truth. There is a drive in you that wants to find truth with a capital T. This is a very deep drive in you. But this drive has probably been hijacked by your cultural upbringing. So when I tell you to trust your drive and truth, you might say, oh yeah, Leo, that's already what I'm doing. You know, I'm religious and that's why I believe in God, because I trust my drive for truth. That's not what I'm saying. Or you might say, but Leo, you know, yeah, that's, you know, I agree with you. Amen. That's why I'm an atheist and why I'm materialist and why I'm very skeptical and scientific minded, very rational minded, because I have this drive, this passion for truth. That's not what I mean either. See, both of those are actually backdoor manipulations of the ego. What I mean is a drive for truth is like direct experience of reality. It's a very sober thing. Truth as distinguished from beliefs. Truth with a capital T is not a belief. It is not science. It is not religion. It is not what you would typically call spirituality. What is it then? Well, you'll only find out after many, many years on the path towards truth with a capital T in a very self-honest way, very carefully moving away from all the egoic stuff that I talked about earlier, moving away from all that, clearing all that way, that stuff, that debris out from your vision. And then you might have a little sneak peek preview of what truth looks like if you do all that stuff successfully. And that's a tall order to fill, to do all that stuff successfully, because all this stuff in your way, all this debris, it's not just like dead static debris. This debris is like alive. It's highly animated and it wants to survive. It will not release its grip on you unless you're very, very persistent and you're very self-honest and very open-minded about this pursuit. Because like it clings to you, right? It sinks its claws into you. All this egoic stuff. It's really alive. It's alive. Also, what you should trust is love, compassion, and gratitude. These drives in you, you have these drives, everyone does. You have the drive for love, unconditional love, for compassion, and for gratitude. And these you can find solace in them, you can find grounding in them, they can be like your anchor. But also, again, it can be like a backdoor for the ego, especially, for example, love. It's very easy to rationalize many of the egoic things that you do in your life as being love. But actually, they're not love. They're a distorted form of love. Like, for example, if you think of romantic love, these are distorted forms of love. And even the love that you have, for example, for your children, this is a distorted form of love because it's a highly selective, conditional form of love. So, for example, when you go to school to look at your kids, you know, interacting in school, and you see a classroom full of kids, and you only love your kids, that's not true love. It's very easy to love your kids. The ego loves to love its possessions. That's what comprises the ego. The ego loves to love your car. It loves to love your business. It loves to love your kids. It loves to love your spouse. It loves to love that kind of stuff. What's challenging for the ego to love is the world at large. Can you love the bum on the street? Can you love the other kids in the classroom? Can you love the person that your girlfriend or your boyfriend left you for? That's real love. That's unconditional love. But that's not what most people think about when I say love. Now that kind of love and all of its manifestations, the unconditional manifestations of love, those you can trust in. So if you have a desire, like you just see a poor homeless man sitting on the curb and you just have a desire because you feel compassion for him. It's like, man, it's so hot. It's 100 degrees outside. This guy's burning up in the sun. He's probably hasn't eaten in a week. He looks dirty. Probably hasn't had a shower in a month. I want to give him $20. That kind of drive, that you can trust. Or the gratitude you might feel. Like maybe you're reading a book. You're reading some amazing book that somebody wrote 100 years ago. The person is dead now. But you could see from reading the book that this is a brilliant book. And this person devoted a significant chunk of his life to writing this book. And you're reading this book and you finish the book and it's like, wow, that was an amazing book. It really, really touched me. And then you feel this sort of sense of gratitude for the writer of this book. Like, oh, wow, I'm really grateful that this person went out of his way to contribute something like this to society. That you can trust. Also, what you can trust is silence. Silence and solitude. When you sit down and you just sit on your couch late at night in the silence by yourself and you just shut up and you just ponder life. That silence you can trust. All the answers to life are really found in that silence. But the question is, how much of that silence do you actually experience on a regular basis? If you're like most people, very little. Because actually, you spend most of your life drowning out that silence with noise. Music, video games, TV, internet, YouTube, magazines, friends, partying, sex, relationships, children, business, whatever. Have you started to look into those behaviors and started to see their self-deceptive nature? How the point of all that noise is what? To distract you from the silence. Which is one of the only things in life you can trust. The silence. Another thing you can trust is your emotions. Now, here you're going to say, but Leo, you just told us in the other list not to trust our emotions. And now you're saying, I can trust my emotions? Which is it? Exactly. Exactly. That's why this issue is paradoxical. And that's why it requires work. That's why the devil is in the details. Your emotions are actually very accurate signals sent to you by the body and by the unconscious mind. They're shockingly, uncannily, eerily accurate. You can use them to diagnose exactly what's wrong with you, physically and mentally. They are very powerful signals and signposts. But the problem is that most people are not taught how to read their emotions. It takes years of work to be able to read your emotions and to be able to really trust in them. But after you've been doing personal development for a few years, you start to see, as you develop more awareness over your emotions, like, oh, this emotion is telling me this thing, and that emotion there is telling me that thing, and I can actually use them as very accurate compasses to guide me to where I ultimately want to be in life. But that requires very carefully separating that out from being triggered by your emotions. So, for example, what I'm telling you here, I'm not telling you that when you feel angry and you want to yell at somebody because they cut you off in traffic, that right there would be, you know, oh, Leo, I'm just trusting my emotions. You know, my emotions told me to flip that guy off because he's a fucking asshole. No. That would be you succumbing to getting triggered by the emotions, which is not the same thing as really trusting your deeper emotions, right? Not the surface level annoyances in your life, but like the deep emotions. For example, you have the deep desires, emotional desires in yourself, if you've noticed, for connection with other people, for experiencing nature, for beauty, for justice, for contribution to the world, for love. For truth. Something like truth is not just an intellectual pursuit. And something like contribution or love or justice, at their epitome, you know, at their peak, these things are emotional in nature. These are the emotions, so to speak, of the higher self, the drives of the higher self. And you have to get in touch with that and separate those out from the drives of the lower self. And how do you do that? By doubting a lot. So in order to get to this list of all the stuff you can trust, really the way you get there in practice is by doubting the shit out of everything. And then whatever remains is simply all the stuff you can trust. There's really little possibility to just start with all these things that you can trust. That's very challenging. Because how do you know what you can trust and what you can't trust? Only by going through a very radical and deep process of inquiry. Sorting the wheat from the chaff, so to speak. And then you can come up with a list of stuff to trust. It's not really enough to just listen to my list and then say, okay, I'm just going to trust all this stuff. No, because you're not going to have the fine-grained distinctions made that are necessary unless you go through the doubting process. See? So even though I'm kind of giving you a shortcut here, there's only so far that this shortcut can take you. You do have to actually jump into the mud and get your hands dirty, because this stuff is decided and learned in the same way that you learn to ride a bicycle. You don't learn to ride a bicycle by listening to me tell you how to ride a bicycle. You have to actually sit on the damn bicycle. You have to go, start to pedal, fall down a few times, scrape your knees, you know, take a few nasty spills, and then you'll learn how to balance on the bicycle. Same thing here. Other things you can trust are your creative muse. Have you noticed that there's a muse inside of you? It's really like a separate being almost. Ideas and inspirations come to you where you want to go out there and you want to create stuff, whether you want to create video games or movies, you want to write novels, you want to paint, you want to change the world, whatever you want to do. These are all creative sort of activities, and they're sparked in you by a muse. This muse can be cultivated and listened to. It's like a little voice inside of you. It's a very faint voice, but you can learn to listen to it. That thing you can trust. Also, what you can trust is awareness and direct experience. Awareness as distinguished from the mind or thinking. Thinking in general you cannot trust, but awareness and direct experience you can trust. Direct conscious experience. Just to explain what that is a whole hour-long discussion. Can't really go into it here. But if you're following along with me and you've heard some of my other discussions previously about awareness, then you know what I'm talking about, and that you can trust. Awareness you can trust. And also what you can trust is your natural powers as a human being. As a human being, you have natural defenses and capabilities that nature has equipped you with to live, survive, and to thrive. And these you can trust. You can trust in your ability to walk. You can trust in your ability to talk. You can trust in your ability to procure food and find water and shelter and to be confident in yourself, to not be cripplingly afraid of other people, right? You can trust all these things because basically these are all abilities that all your ancestors needed to possess in order to survive. If they didn't possess these abilities, they would be dead and you wouldn't be here. So in a very real sense, these are natural abilities that are hard-coded into your DNA. And those you can trust in. So that concludes the list of stuff you can trust. What does it mean to trust this stuff? It means that you take guidance from these parts of you. If you notice, everything I discussed here, they're almost like parts of yourself. There are parts of yourself, sort of like little voices. You can almost think of it as like the devil on your shoulder, the angel on your shoulder. You know, the devil whispers in your ear some stuff. Obviously, you shouldn't trust it. Angel whispers some stuff into your ear. You should trust that. So that's kind of what it's like if you want to really, dumb it down. It's kind of like that. So yeah, you listen to that angel on your ear, your creative muse. You listen to your awareness faculties. You listen to your drives for passion, your drives for love, for compassion, for gratitude, for beauty, for contribution, right? You listen to that pure, original inner self, the one you had as a child. You listen to your intuition. You listen to your higher emotions. That's what it means. And you trust in those. In fact, you trust your life to those things completely. You surrender your logical mind to those things. So that when it comes time to make decisions about who you're going to marry or what part of the country you're going to move to or what kind of business you're going to start or whether you should go off live in the woods and become a Buddha or something like that, you don't listen to your logical mind. You don't listen to your belief systems. You don't listen to your cultural background. You don't listen to any of that kind of stuff. You listen to your inner muse, your inner emotions, your inner intuition. You listen to that instead. And you just have the faith to follow through on that. That's what it is. That's really what religious faith is. So this notion of religious faith, you know, a lot of people, including myself, take faith as kind of a dirty word. We don't like that word. You know, rationally minded people don't really like the word faith because it could mean like, oh, just kind of blind belief and stuff. But that's not really what faith is. What real faith is making this distinction between the things you can't trust and the things you can trust, and then fully, with your whole heart, buying into everything that you can trust because you have done the inner work, and then just kind of surrendering your entire life to it, surrendering your logical mind to that, which doesn't really involve blind faith or belief. It's more of like an emotional surrender. And that can be difficult for left-brained thinkers to accept, swallow that. Because if you're really stuck in your mind, you think that your mind is your best tool. Actually, your mind is not your best tool. You need to start to doubt your mind until you realize that your heart is your best tool and that the mind serves the heart. So yeah, so the key is to make this distinction between the ego and the higher self. And like I said, this requires getting in the mud, getting your hands dirty. Simultaneously, you're going to have to doubt yourself a lot, but also trust certain parts of yourself. And I can't really tell you how to do that. I wish I could. I've given you my best attempt with these two lists. But you're going to have to go in there and actually sort out what's what in your own mind. That's like the growth curve here. Generally speaking, the growth curve for developing self-trust will look something like this. If you're a wounded newbie, like you're depressed or you have a severe victim type of mindset, you have very low self-esteem, if you start off there, you need some basic trust in yourself. Because if you're a wounded newbie, the problem there, the reason you're so wounded is because you have lost all sense of trust. So once you develop some trust there, then you move up and you're kind of like the normal newbie, the non-wounded newbie. And this person needs to start to doubt everything, doubt all your beliefs, doubt all your ideologies, doubt all your models of the world, doubt rationality, science, God, religion, culture, doubt it all, doubt yourself, doubt your own doubt. Go through a few years of that process, doubting everything. Very painful, very emotionally taxing. Then you start to get into intermediate territory. And then intermediate territory, the problem with there is that now you get a little cocky because you've been doubting so much. Now you're a little cocky and you're like, oh, well, I already know what's what because I've already spent a few years doubting. But actually, you haven't doubted deeply enough yet. So as an intermediate, now it gets even worse. Now you got to doubt even harder. Doubt the shit that you thought you could never doubt in your life. Doubt that until like there's nothing left. And then you get into advanced. And then when you're at advanced, what that looks like is actually you're like, oh, hey, you know, I've been doubting my whole life for 5 years. And now, hey, all of a sudden I can find that I can like trust myself a little bit. Wow, what a relief. I can actually trust my heart. I have a heart. I have emotions. I have an intuition. I have an inner muse. What is all this stuff? This is crazy. It's like I've become a hippie. Look at all this new age stuff. But I like it. I like it because it feels good. It feels very natural. It feels like I'm a kid again. Wow, this is so cool. That's when you start to become that integrated human being. That's when your mind and your heart start to integrate. Ken Wilber refers to this as the centaur, the stage of development called the centaur. The reason he calls it that, it's kind of a cute little metaphor, is because supposedly the centaur is, you know, half man, half horse, or half animal. So he's got the logical mind. He hasn't lost the logical mind. And he's got also the animal part of him, the bottom half, the horse is the animal part. And the centaur kind of fuses the two together so that now the heart and the mind, the logical and the intuitive, have come together and they function as one unit, integrated. That's a pretty cool place to get to, but it takes work. Don't think you're going to get there just in 1 or 2 years. You're probably looking at 3, 5, 10 years of pretty deep inner work. Because when you start off as an undeveloped person who hasn't really done a lot of inner work, then the bottom line is that you really can't trust yourself. An undeveloped person, his penalty is that he cannot trust himself in life. Because if he trusts himself, he's going to get himself into trouble because he's not developed. The more you develop yourself, the more you can then trust yourself. In the same way that if you have like a child, you know, if you have a mature child, you can trust that child with the keys to the car. You could even trust that child with a bottle of alcohol because you know the child is wise. He's mature. So even if you leave a bottle of alcohol at home and then you leave, the child is there. He's mature. He's not stupid enough to go drink the whole thing. But if you have a stupid child, an undeveloped child, then when you leave the house, you better take the car keys, all the whiskey in your file, in your, you know, in your office cabinet. And you better take all the guns and all the weapons in your closet. You better take all that shit with you. Because if you leave him with all that, something really bad's going to go down. You see? That's the difference. And it's like that with you. Right now, chances are, unless you've done a lot of work on yourself, that you are that immature child. That immature child is in you. And he's creating a mess. Or she's creating a mess inside your mind. And that's why your life reflects that. See? The first 3 years, I find, is the hardest part of this journey. Because the first 3 years of personal development, you're starting to question and doubt so many parts of yourself. And it feels confusing. It feels like you've lost your sense of direction. It might feel like you're moving backwards. It might feel like you're regressing. Like you're not just working on external success. And, you know, you're going to be overwhelmed to the point of depression with self-doubt during these first 3 years of this journey. Maybe longer. But man, once you make it past like the three or the 5 year mark, and you've done all the work, it starts to feel really good because now the payoff starts to come back to you. You start to see the results of all your work. And it's like, oh, wow, I can trust myself a little bit. I can let go of the reins a little bit and my life doesn't fall apart. And I can be kind of spontaneous. I don't have to be rigid anymore. I don't have to be very harsh with myself. I don't have to talk down to myself or criticize myself. None of this stuff. And my life just kind of flows. It flows. And that's ultimately what you're working towards, right? You want your life to flow. You want your life to be effortless. I talked about in a prior episode how you want your life to be effortless. And some people have asked me, Leo, how do I make an effortless life? Shoot a video about how I can make my life effortless. Well, everything I talk about is really geared towards helping you to make your life effortless, to make it flow. And man, the ability to trust yourself is a big component of that. The ultimate point you want to get to in your life is complete trust. 100% trust in your emotions, in your cognitions, in your body sensations, everything. It's just like, you're just like a force of nature. There's no more hesitation in you. And even if there is hesitation, you trust in that hesitation. It doesn't bother you. You're fully integrated. You're the centaur. And then you're moving even beyond that. You're transcending the centaur. That's the ultimate point. And this level of self-trust has to be earned. You can't read it in a book. You can't go buy it in the store. You can't even learn it from me. Really, what I'm doing here is I'm outlining a path for you that you can choose to undertake. Hopefully, you're wise enough to see the benefits that will come from that, from being able to one day wake up in the morning and say, wow, today I 100% trust myself. Wouldn't that be a powerful place to get to in your life? All right, that's it. I'm wrapping up. Please click the like button for me. Post your comments down below. I do read them. Share this episode with a friend. And lastly, come check out my newsletter right here at actualize.org. Sign up to the newsletter to stay on track with this process. That's what actualize.org is here for. There's a lot of nuance to this. There's a lot of other concepts I want to teach you that will be critical to your success on this journey. So to make sure that that happens so you don't fall off track and you don't forget, that's what the newsletter will help you with. And stay tuned for more in the future. Take action on any actionable steps that you hear in the episodes, because that's what actually makes the stuff real in your life. It's not enough to listen to me. Listening to me is important. Don't get me wrong. You do have to listen to me. You do have to conceptually understand the things I talk about. And that in and of itself, for many people, is no small feat. But that's really just the start. That's the start. You understand it? Now you got to go build it. Go build your life. And as you're building your life, stick with me. Watch me building my life. Watch me sharing with you some of the highest peaks that you can attain with your development. Get inspired by those, and then just keep moving towards that every single day. And within a few years, you know, it's not going to take you 5 years. Within just a couple of years, you're going to see huge improvements. You won't trust yourself 100%, but you don't need to. Even a 10% increase in your trust level will already be huge for you. And you can see, you know, go read the comments below on some of my videos. You'll see people commenting like, oh, I've been following along and doing this stuff for a year or two, and my life is changing in radical ways. That's what'll happen to you. There's no way that can't happen to you if you actually take action on the things I talk about. The only problem is that you're very likely to forget and just to fall off track. But that's easily fixed by signing up and staying tuned. So I hope you do that, and I'll see you soon with more.